Welcome to the Future Ready Today podcast, Student Takeover.
Hi, I'm Molly.
And I'm Ashani. We should both right now be revising for our A-levels, but given that exams are cancelled, we're finding new ways to fill our time productively.
Today, we've taken over the Pearson Future Ready Today podcast to interview Dr. Emma Thompson from the University of Southampton, to get her ideas on what we could be using this time to prepare for our next steps, and to have a little chat about the extended project qualification and the future of learning and work.
We could start off by talking a little bit about EPQ. So both Molly and I completed our EPQ in year 12, so that was last year at school. I personally really enjoyed the experience. I really liked having the freedom to sort of find something that I'm interested in and really dig deep into the research and tracking my progress. And then of course, the actual writing of the dissertation. Yeah, and the freedom and the independence that was there, I personally really enjoyed. So we just wanted to ask you how useful the EPQ is actually for preparing students for university life, and if it's useful in preparing students for the future world of work as well.
Before I answer that question, can I just ask you how you feel it has helped, it's been helpful in your other studies?
I think the organisational skills gained from doing an EPQ are really handy in the rest of in my other subjects as well. So the process of, you know, planning, doing the research, and then planning what, picking out the bits of information that I think will be useful to the argument that I'm trying to make, and then sort of organizing it in a way that makes sense. Since I take essay writing subjects outside of EPQ, it's been really useful in sort of processing information and being able to have a line of argument in what I'm writing.
Great. Yeah. How about you, Molly?
I agree with all of that. I'm also very much into sort of more English essay writing subjects. I also think there's lots of practical skills involved in EPQ that you don't find elsewhere. So really sort of simple stuff once you've got your head around it, things like how to footnote properly, how to properly do the things that you're going to need to do when you start writing dissertations at university, but you don't have to do an essays at school. So that sort of leap, it makes it more of a progressive leap than just falling into it.
Yeah, thank you for answering that. I wanted to hear how you had experienced the EPQ, because that is our sense as well, in that there are both conceptual level sort of skills that you've been able to develop in terms of, you know, Shani, you mentioned about structuring your thoughts and your line of argument, such that you are arguably going to be writing a much more sophisticated piece than you've ever written before. And like you said, Molly, that, you know, you've learned the practical skills. It won't just be the fact that you are referencing properly, but it'll also be how to go about accessing good academic sources. So, you know, getting hold of good books, getting hold of journal articles, as well as perhaps balancing that with some of the stuff that you would find online or available to you at school. So that's a huge part of why I think it's beneficial for students before they go to university. I think it's also to do with time management as well. You are balancing really busy workloads in doing your other subjects and hopefully all of the other wonderful things that you get up to in your spare time, and managing to do a really quite difficult and independent project. So you've had to learn to structure your own time. Yes, you've had deadlines, perhaps some interim deadlines and things like that. But a lot of the deadlines and how you've shaped your work has been completely up to you. And that is entirely reflective of what we expect students to do at university. You certainly get lots of what appears like free time on a timetable, because you perhaps don't have as many lessons as you would do ordinarily at school, or what we call taught time. So yeah, learning to structure your time effectively is another really important thing that I think students will take away from doing the EPQ.
Just leading on for that, how do universities and higher education institutes view the EPQ? Do they view it as something they look for when they're taking on a student? Is it something that they value highly?
Yeah, and they do. And I think different universities have different approaches to that. I obviously come from an institution at Southampton where, you know, we do really value the EPQ. We were the first university to make a lowered alternative offer. So we will include the EPQ in grade offers. So where students apply to us, if they're applying to a course where we make that offer, and it's the majority of our courses, we will make a lowered offer. So say for something like history, a typical offer would be AAB, and then the lowered offer, lowered alternative offer would be ABB with an A in the EPQ. So basically students get to hold two offers from one institution. The result that they get on results day is the offer that they would come in under. And we're not the only university that does that. A lot of universities are doing that. They might do it on an upfront basis. So they might say they have a policy, or they might make sort of individual or ad hoc offers that include the EPQ as an alternative. Some universities won't make it part of the offer making process, but that doesn't mean that they don't value it. So when you write your personal statement, you are looking to sell yourself to a university. And given the EPQ is perhaps the most university-like piece of work you are going to have done before that personal statement has been written, it's a really obvious way and a really good way of being able to sell yourself to a university in terms of demonstrating your academic preparedness, I would suggest. Different universities take different approaches, but no university has ever come out and said, no, don't do the EPQ, it's rubbish. That's not the case. They will all write positively about it in their admission statements, whether they make an alternative offer or not. And arguably, my perspective is that the value of the EPQ is not the grade, is not how it helps you get into university, but it's actually about you and how you have developed as a person and what that will see you do in future. So that's the most important thing about it for me.
Do you think that as the EPQ becomes sort of more widely recognised, other universities might start applying the same procedure that Southampton does in sort of having EPQ specific grade requirements?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's certainly something that we have seen grow over a long period of time. So we started making our first offers that included the EPQ in the 2012-2013 admission cycle. So actually quite a long time ago now. And we have seen more and more universities adopt that approach and across more subjects as well. I think as they begin to recognise that it's not just for those essay-based subjects that this is useful, but, you know, computer scientists, medics need all of these skills as well, even though they might not necessarily be writing as many essays as those in social sciences or within the humanities. At some point, all students have either got to do a large piece of work, whether that's a dissertation or a final year project, which very much mirrors either the dissertation style piece in the EPQ or the artifact option.
Yeah, no, I personally have had lots of my applications to uni lowered, their grades lowered for EPQ. It's definitely a very helpful thing to have under your belt. I was just wondering if you could talk about the research that you've done into the value of the EPQ for enhancing other A-level and degree progression and outcomes.
Yeah, sure. At Southampton, we have looked at our students who have come in to our university, and we're of course able to track their progression. We look at the profile of what they have come in with, so whether they have come in with an EPQ or whether they have not come in with an EPQ, and we can track those two kind of different pathways accordingly. And what we see is that there are higher proportions of EPQ students who are making the progression from first year to second year. So you only have to pass that first year at university. Your marks aren't taken into account. It's almost like a kind of probation period, I suppose, and, you know, getting you up to speed with what you need to do. And so we are really happy to see that there are higher proportions of EPQ students making that progression. And that really isn't a surprise to us for the reasons that we've already discussed, because you are simply ready for university style learning. You're just going to hit the ground running, knowing what you know from having done the EPQ. Furthermore, it's not just a first year phenomenon. It also kind of goes through to your final years as well, where we see across our five different faculties, across a really wide subject range, that there are higher proportions of EPQ students achieving first class and upper second class degrees. So essentially the best degrees that you want to be getting when you go to university. That is the kind of standard that any graduate program is likely to ask for. So, you know, you guys have put yourself in a really wonderful position for, you know, your future.
That's really interesting. And I think it makes sense because I know a lot of my peers have been worried about the jump from A-levels to university degree level learning. And it really makes sense that having done an EPQ, knowing about that sort of independent style learning where you're really like pursuing something that you're actually interested in and trying to form different arguments and ideas. And I think, yeah, it makes complete sense that that helps you do well in university life as well.
Finally, on the EPQ, what tips do you have for completing a successful EPQ?
Oh, okay. That's a really good question. Thinking about the EPQs that I have moderated, thinking about the EPQ students who I have worked with, one of the fundamental things that I think students need to have a very clear idea of as soon as you possibly can is what your aims and objectives are. So often I see students who have gone through the research process sort of ambling through it, you know, finding interesting stuff out, and that's great. And they might come up with a research question that perhaps encompasses that research that they have done, which is also great and also what we would expect to see. But perhaps they haven't really thought about the purpose of why they're doing the project, or the purpose of why they are answering that particular research question. So often I will say to students, well, to what end? And they might look at me blankly and I'm like, why are you doing this? That's what I mean. You know, why do you want to do it personally? You know, why has this really sparked your imagination? Because I think acknowledging what is motivating you is a really important thing in order for it to continue to motivate you throughout the project. So that's an important kind of fundamental step. But I would also say there's lots of tips in terms of recognizing that this is more than just an essay, or it's more than just making something. This is a piece of project management. So you are going to have to manage yourself and a project, and it's okay to ask for help. You know, if you're not very good at project management, or you don't have much experience with it, you know, go online and have a look for stuff that will help you with project management, as well as, you know, writing a good essay. And of course, you know, making use of everything that is out there with respect to helping you do research. So listening to your teachers and using all the kind of free good resources that you can in order to find useful sources that will inform the body of work that you are putting together.
I think especially about choosing a subject that you're going to remain motivated is definitely something. I know a lot of people debate different ideas of what they could do with their EPQ, and having done it myself, I think the main one is choosing something you really want to research, you want to go away and do it, because there isn't going to be that teacher that's constantly pushing you necessarily. You have to want to do it. I think moving on to the topic that everyone's talking about at the moment, which is obviously coronavirus and the lockdown. I think young people, from my experience and my friends living like that, are feeling a bit in limbo because we're at that point, we've finished A-levels, exams are cancelled, and we don't know what's happening with university. We don't know what's happening in September, so no one really is 100% sure. But what could young people be using this time that they've put aside for revision and no longer have to do? How could they be using that in a useful way?
So I guess it's my response to that would be that it's a good period of downtime almost. It's like time that you never imagined that you would have. And so it is your opportunity to perhaps enrich your knowledge or your skill set in an area maybe that you wanted to previously, but perhaps didn't have the opportunity to. So for example, you could perhaps revisit some of the stuff that you covered in your subjects that you didn't, of course, get to do exams for, and perhaps explore further. So there might have been something that you knew was going to crop up within your revision that perhaps you want to go into more depth into. I would recommend almost doing like you did with your EPQs, where perhaps you might use something like Google Scholar or core.ac.uk as a search engine, where you could perhaps search for papers that allow you to really enrich your knowledge in a particular area whilst also building your skill set, because again you are doing that kind of university level study. Look out for what universities are offering, I would suggest, in terms of helping you with doing that. So you might want to watch some taster lectures or perhaps some TED talks, again, so that you are immersing yourself within stuff that is interesting but is also a worthwhile pursuit.
I think some of my peer group are doing some of those things, because I personally appreciate having the time to be able to do those things that I'm interested in but maybe didn't have the time to do when, you know, lessons or schoolwork was just overloading. But also I think the pandemic is probably likely to have slightly longer term impacts on university life and school life in general. So do you think the pandemic will affect young people thinking of applying to university? Could there be shifts in different people choosing not to apply, for example, when they might have beforehand?
It's something that I'm really concerned about, you know, both personally and professionally, that perhaps students who are in year 13, who are concerned about what their university experience might look like, because let's be honest, nobody knows what September is going to look like. We don't even know what June's really going to look like. So I can understand there's probably quite a high level of trepidation in that students might not want to have an overwhelmingly online experience. So that might be putting them off, particularly as some universities have come out and said that that is the way that they are going. Most universities haven't decided that yet. So I can imagine there's probably students who were thinking about going to university who might decide to either defer a year or to rethink their application and that sort of thing. I hope that means that those students will still want to pursue a university education. I really do. I think it's so, so important. If you've decided that's what you want to do, to continue to do that, because it's just so enriching. So I hope students do continue to pursue that even after this time. But I'm sure there probably will be some students who don't decide to do that for whatever reason, you know, personal choice, what have you. And I think that's really sad. And I hope that whatever happens, people are happy with the decisions that they make. But yeah, I do worry that there might be some longer term consequences, particularly for students who are coming from less privileged backgrounds, or, you know, are coming from areas where there is less participation in higher education. And I'd be hugely sad to see fewer students as well from those backgrounds, simply because of circumstance.
And for those that are still planning to go on to university in September, or that are thinking of entering the world of employment, how could they be using this time to prepare themselves for those two things?
So a little bit like what I've been saying about how you can immerse yourself within stuff that you are interested in, sort of it dovetails with that question, in that I would really recommend students to do some MOOCs. So if you've not heard of the term MOOC, it stands for Massive Open Online Course. These are usually like mini university modules, or kind of that are offered either by universities or sometimes by industry partners as well, that offer a wide range of different things. So there's some stuff that is very much knowledge based, where you might be able to pursue a particular subject, like I mentioned beforehand. But there's also loads of stuff that will help you prepare for the world of work. There's a couple of courses that I recently looked at earlier that looks to support people in preparing themselves for interviews, and things like that. You know, you might be able to upskill in terms of like your tech skills. That's certainly something that I would like to do. And there's loads of stuff out there, perhaps that you haven't thought about before, that might really improve your employability skills, as well as your readiness for university study. So I think MOOCs are a really obvious, simple, free way of being able to do that, and a really meaningful way of using your time.
Everything we've sort of talked about so far sort of brings us to a point about whether the education curriculum is sort of well suited to prepare young people for the world of work or university life today. So I was just wondering what your thoughts are on whether the current school curriculum and the ways that the education system operates prepares students for careers in the future.
This is, of course, a completely personal perspective, mm-hmm. But I think the current school curriculum doesn't allow as much freedom within it as I would like to see, and as much intellectual ownership as I would allow as I would like to see students afforded. So, you know, we've had a conversation already about the EPQ. I think the EPQ is an example of how curiosity can be embedded within the curriculum, so that it allows you to develop not only knowledge, but it allows you to develop skills and a way for you to make sense of your own interests and your own pursuits and passions, in the same way that when you were in nursery or when you were in reception or year one, you had much more freedom to perhaps play and explore. I would perhaps like to see much more of that freedom, that play with intellectual concepts throughout the curriculum. It seems a shame to me that you have that to start off with, and you now have that with the EPQ and alternatives, and of course when you get to university, but perhaps there can be an absence of it within the rest of the curriculum. So I guess I would love to see more independent learning embedded through some framework in the curriculum, so that you do have more of a sense of hey, I can do this. I already know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if the curriculum is enjoyed and you're enjoying what you're doing, you're going to take a lot more out of it. Not only will you do better in exams because you'll want to be learning about it, but in yourself, you'll become more immersed in it and be able to understand it better. looking at the future, say 10, 20 years on from now, the workforce might change quite considerably. So there's going to be jobs that shrink and sectors that grow as well. So there's going to be a lot of more menial jobs maybe taken over, and a lot more jobs in, say, IT and other workforces may grow. So how do you think, how do you envision jobs and careers changing over the next 10 to 20 years?
That is really, really good and difficult question, because I sit here knowing what I know about the world of work and the kind of the skills that employers want students either coming out of school or university to be equipped with. But some of the skills that people will need in future, we simply don't know what those are going to look like. I think if anything, if we've seen anything from the current COVID situation, is that we are increasingly digitized. We are increasingly reliant upon technology in terms of being interconnected. And I think that's had a light shone on it in terms of the fact that, you know, perhaps we don't need to do as much travel as we once did. We've been able to manage this as successfully as we possibly can. So perhaps there might need to be more tech skills, you know, skills that perhaps we didn't prize quite so much 10 or 20 years ago, or even at the moment. You know, every generation brings new skills based on their interests. So I would say, you know, allow yourself to be guided by those things that you are loving, and just wanting to upskill in the way that we've already talked about. I find it hard to, you know, to fully answer the question about what, you know, what skills people will need. Ultimately, though, you are always going to need management skills. You are always going to need to perhaps project manage yourself, project manage things that you are working on. So thinking about your own skill set and your ability to manage situations is always going to be of importance. I hope that answers your question as fully as I can without a crystal ball in front of me.
It does. Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
I was just thinking about sort of how the economy might change, partly due to the pandemic, but also due to other factors of just what the modern world is like. I think many of us obviously hope that out of this will emerge a green economy. The green sector could grow a lot. And I personally am a little bit worried that schools and the education curriculum doesn't place enough emphasis on climate issues. What do you think about that? Is other ways that it could be implemented into the education curriculum which would benefit young people?
Yeah, I think there could be lots of different ways. I'm actually, without trying to flip your question back onto you, I'm actually more interested in what you guys think about that, about how that could be built into your curriculum, how you might have liked to have seen it within your curriculum a bit more, because, you know, you're the ones who've just experienced learning. So I think there are lots of ways related to some of the stuff that that I have said that allows perhaps more of an independent or global view as you are learning. I think that could be one way. So rather than just, you know, having quite a narrow curriculum, perhaps having it a little bit wider, a little bit more global, and a little bit more free would be one way in which you could see a better understanding of environmental issues, for example. But I'd really love to know, like, what you guys perhaps might have liked to have seen.
So before joining sixth form at QE with Molly, I was homeschooled in a very rural part of India, and for me, one of the best things about my education when I was younger was that a lot of it was A, project-based, and B, based in our natural environment. And I think that's that lots of traditional schools lack this, in that even from a really young age, education is, you know, you're sitting on a desk, you're listening to the teacher, and then you're writing notes. And although that has its benefits and it has its uses, I think that misses the great benefits of, you know, learning outdoors or having connections to your actual living environment. So I think that's one thing that could potentially have be very beneficial.
Yeah. How about you, Molly?
Well, I think aside from sort of the environment and things like that, I think other things that could be worked into school are the more practical ways of dealing with life. Because although we study subjects, and I love those subjects, I love thick form and everything about it, there's some practical things you come away not knowing. So about finance, about filing, what taxation works, sort of normal things you're going to need at some point in your life, you won't necessarily come away from school knowing. And if you don't have people around you that are able to sit you down and talk you through how to do that, it can be quite tough to try and work that out. They're very complicated, confusing things. And learning about finance and things that you're going to need at some point in your life are important things that I think schools should better prepare you for.
Yeah, I completely agree with both of you. And I think actually there could be some overlap between what you've said, and that Shani, you mentioned, you know, that in your previous experience, there was more focus on kind of project-based learning. And that's absolutely the kind of thing that could lend itself to what you were talking about, Molly. You know, you could learn some of that knowledge or some of those skills as to how to manage your taxes and things like that, you know, through project-based learning, where perhaps you have to, you know, practically do some of those things. And reconnecting with nature is another way, another great way of doing that. It's also related back to the idea of having a bit more freedom to connect with your local environment. And I think people have probably had a bit more of that in recent times, you know, actually making the most of that hour's exercise outdoors, and that kind of connection as well. It's even things like, you know, how much you can learn by looking at the trees or the plants around you, and just perhaps a bit more freedom with which to explore as a method of learning.
I think this year having A-levels cancelled as well has really highlighted how much we rely on exams in our education system, and maybe also how much they're not really necessary. So do you think people might start thinking about different ways of, you know, monitoring education after, you know, after we all return back to whatever normal would be?
Yeah, I would like to think so. I still think that there will be a focus on demonstrating a level of competency. You know, that is how we are able to kind of judge a national standard, by, you know, by having exams, by having grades that you have achieved, you know, the, I suppose, that kind of that leveling. But as we've discussed, you know, perhaps different modes of assessment, perhaps different styles of qualification that afford you that freedom that we have talked about, in a way that still allows you to demonstrate you know, levels of competency, but in ways that are perhaps more meaningful to you.
I definitely agree. I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Are there any resources or what can young people do at a time like this if they're finding the current situation tough?
In terms of their studies or
anything, in terms of their studies or just the current situation, it's a very confusing time, and a lot of people won't necessarily know what's going on, and that can take their toll on people. Do you have any advice or guide them anywhere of what they could go to if they're finding it tough.
I've certainly got a lot of stuff in terms of academic resources, but I also want to touch upon the fact that this, as you've said, this is a really weird time. It's really unsettling. I found it unsettling myself, working from home, not being able to do my job in the way that I would normally, having to understand what productive means in different capacities or in different ways. And just so for a start, people being kind to themselves and talking to each other, maybe not always talking over a screen because I find that weird, but talking to people in person, particularly as the lockdown starts to ease, reconnecting with people, talking and things like that. And if you are really struggling, speaking with teachers in their pastoral capacity to offer any kind of mental health support and things like that. But beyond just kind of your general well-being, the MOOCs that I've suggested are perhaps also useful for that, but also in terms of upskilling. So you might want to check out somewhere FutureLearn. FutureLearn is the UK's provider. It's run by the Open University. It's where a series of MOOCs are. You also have Coursera, which is was typically the United States provider of MOOCs. So there are a couple of places to have a look at. And something that myself and my colleagues have put together, particularly for those students who are in year 13, or even for students in year 12 who are wanting to kind of get ahead of the game. We've put together like a mini Google Classroom where students can access taster material that will help them in feeling more confident, we hope, about going to university. There's a series of taster lectures, academic reading, seminar questions and things like that, as well as the academic research skills framework. So a session there that kind of tells you everything you need to know academically before you go to university, that we hope will make students realize, okay, this is what I need to do, this is practically what I'm going to do when I get to university. So for example, one of the things that we've got in there that I know students don't always know about is when you get to university, yes, you will go to your lectures, but there is somewhere else that you will need to go in order to get all of your information. And for most universities, that will be by hosting all of their module information on a virtual learning environment. Now, if you're used to rocking up at school in the first week and meeting your head of year and meeting your tutor and them giving you your timetable and telling you what you're going to be doing, where you need to go here, there and everywhere. And that just doesn't happen to the same extent at university. So we've supported with those kinds of things so that you know exactly what your first few weeks are going to be like, so that you can, walk into university, whether it be online or physically or whatever, and feel confident about knowing what you've got to do and managing, being able to manage the situation in a really brave way. It can be scary. I found it scary, I'll be really honest with you. I would love for everybody to feel like not only excited about university, but really well prepared and confident that they can just kind of nail it.
That's really good. I think university is intimidating for a lot of people, and a lot of the things you've mentioned there will really help people get their mind at ease and get used to the environment they're going to be in. And
yeah, and I think this kind of information is especially useful for people maybe who are students who are first generation university applicants.
Completely. Couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, I was I myself was a first generation to university, so I had no idea what to expect really. And I remember almost all the way throughout my university experience, I saw a friend of mine whose parents were both teachers, so they've both been, you know, been through the system before, and I was always amazed by how she just knew what she was doing the whole time. And it's acknowledging where perhaps you need to be kinder to yourself and be like, well, I didn't know what I was going to be doing, but hey, I found out, and I'm recognizing that that's a real success in itself. So yeah, it can be intimidating, and I really do feel for those students whose families don't have any prior experience and can't therefore perhaps prepare them in the same way. There might be things that you think that you're going to take away from a university level education, and then you come out with so much more, you know, beyond subject knowledge, beyond a skill set that is going to be important for your employability, but your sense of self through being able to immerse yourself and challenge your own thinking and things like that. You will have gains through going to university that you won't perhaps fully appreciate even until 5-10 years after.
Thank you very much, Emma. You've been very helpful. I think you've answered a lot of questions from EPQ to coronavirus to education. So thank you very much.
It's been really, really useful. And having this information out there, like we were talking about, will be useful to many young people. So yeah, and I had a great time talking to you as well. So thank you.
My pleasure. It's been so lovely to meet both of you. And I hope that, you know, whatever happens, you will have a really good experience over the summer and going into the autumn term, whatever that might look like. So good luck, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this Future Ready Today podcast. Look out for more episodes coming soon.